Support for GPB comes from our generous listeners and the Fox Center for Humanistic Inquiry at Emory University, presenting the Elman Lectures in Modern Literature with pachinko author Min Jin Lee, March 1st through 3rd. Complimentary tickets at elman.emory.edu.
Coming up in this episode...
These people actually knew the women's names, their birthday, their medical histories, and then they told them, you have a ticking time bomb in you.
This sounds horrible.
It
sounds like
absolutely
a
awful.
Medical disaster. Were people hurt by this?
Oh my God, yes.
I want to see like perp walk here.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections. Hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB. I'm Orlando Montoya.
And I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge. Orlando, I've read another book, and you will be glad to know that it has nothing to do with the Civil War.
So no historical fictions today.
No, this is not a Civil War. I mean, we'll have more of those later on.
Always love them.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about something Georgia-related, it's inevitable we're going to talk about a few more. Those are coming up in the coming months. But right now, no, we're talking about something that's more recent history, probably more newsy than anything else. It's a book called The Pain Brokers by Elizabeth Chambly Birch. And it's about a network of lawyers and lenders and call center operators and marketers who cooperate, some might say conspire, to capture their share, perhaps an unfair share, of the settlement money due to women who are harmed by something called pelvic mesh.
What is pelvic mesh?
So if I'm understanding this correctly, it's like a wire net that women have surgically installed into their pelvic organs to either prevent or to correct the problem of incontinence. And the mesh, once it's installed, it didn't always cause problems for women. But when it did, it had to be removed. And if a woman was part of a lawsuit against the mesh manufacturer for having been harmed by it, if she had had the surgery for having it removed, then she would be entitled to a bigger settlement. So the first task of the shady people in this book, The Pain Brokers, is to convince women who had the mesh inside them that they had to get it out. Even if it wasn't causing them problems, they had to convince them that they had to get it out because then they could sign them up for a lawsuit and get a bigger settlement.
I like this book already. We're starting with shady people.
And yeah, it's infuriating these shady people.
And how do the shady people even identify these women?
Right, because medical information like that is not supposed to be a matter of public record, right? How would you identify whether someone had one of these things in them? Well, the book provides a kind of flow chart for how this all works. And I asked Elizabeth Chambly Birch because she came into the studio to talk to me about her book. That's how it works with Narrative Edge Conversations. And I asked her, how do these call centers ever discover that these women have mesh inside them?
So there was a data breach in India as health companies began to outsource their medical records keeping. The call centers there realized that they were sitting on a gold mine. And they, in concert with a number of unscrupulous people down in South Florida, began cold calling the women. And those cold calls meant that they had an inordinate amount of medical information about these women. So you can imagine if you're sitting in your kitchen and you get a phone call, normally you'd probably just hang up. But these people actually knew the women's names, their birth date, their medical histories. They knew the name of their surgeon, the name of their implant, the date that they had the surgery. And then they told them, you have a ticking time bomb in you. You have to come to South Florida immediately. You have to have it removed or else you'll die.
So this sounds like the classic scam where it's urgent and they have to act now. So they're going to get it removed.
Yeah, I mean, they're very convincing, right? And scary. Like if you get a phone call that says, hey, we've got all this personal information about you. We know something about your body that you don't. You need this right away. The picture that they paint is, yeah, you got to do it. So what happens from there is they sent him, you know, DocuSign, right? You've seen a DocuSign document before.
You don't even read it half the time.
Well, in part because, like, and this is no slight against DocuSign, it's just how it works. Like, you can scroll back and see it, but it just forwards you to the next place you have to sign. And you're in a hurry. You kind of trust the person who sent it to you, you hope. And then you just sign, done. Well, these women signed up for an agreement that says, hey, we'll pay for your travel, we'll pay for your accommodations, we'll pay for the surgery, and we'll get reimbursed when the mesh manufacturer goes to court and has to pay a huge settlement to you.
Well, did any of that happen?
Well, here's the thing. The women weren't allowed to use their own health insurance to have the surgery done locally, even though it might have been a possibility. They just weren't even allowed. And, you know, with a verbal gun to your head, like, they're not going to think about that. So the paperwork these women signed actually binds them to a loan that had horrible terms, high interest rates. They signed them up as a client for a law firm, even though they've never spoken with a lawyer. And ultimately, it sets the women up to receive little, if anything, from any settlement that ever comes. The author, Elizabeth Chamley Birch, told me, like, the average mesh settlement was $40,000. And in some instances, when the full amount came due, that wouldn't cover it because of all the interest that compounded on these loans they took to get this emergency surgery that may not have even been necessary.
So it's financially unnecessary. What about medically unnecessary or dangerous?
Well, if it's not causing you problems, you best leave it alone because of the way it has to be removed. And Birch described to me in the clearest possible terms what it would take to have mesh removed.
This is a very intricate procedure. It's something that can ordinarily take 7 to 8 hours to do it correctly. Mesh is a product that's meant to go in. It's never meant to go out. It's sort of like putting rebar in concrete. The scar tissue is supposed to form around it, meaning that you are trying to extract this from living tissue. And one of the doctors bragged to me, hey, I ripped these out in 15 minutes.
This sounds horrible. It sounds like
absolutely
a
awful
medical disaster. Were people hurt by this?
Oh my God, yes. So to simplify this story, which can be complex at times, she profiles three women who fell for the scam. They got the phone call. They were convinced to go down to Florida to have the surgery. One was from New Hampshire, one was from South Carolina, and one was from Arkansas. And the woman from Arkansas was named Jerry.
Just to give you a sense as to who Jerry is, she's from Benton, Arkansas. She is living in a long-term stay motel. When she gets the phone call from these makers, from this outfit in South Florida, she is on the bed with her granddaughter. Her granddaughter overhears the phone call because she's answered it on speakerphone, and she says, Granny, you've got to go. You're going to die if you don't go. So Jerry goes and she has the surgery, and she is immediately worse off. She is now permanently incontinent. She wears diapers every day, and she's been to multiple doctors to try to figure out if there's a fix for the fix, and there is not. And, you know, she is tenacious. She's courageous. She is the one who contacts a lawyer, J.R. Baxter, and says, something weird is going on here. I need you to figure out what it is. And she's the one that really kickstarts this whole thing.
Aha! A lawyer who's going to fight. Is this the good guy?
Yeah, J.R. Baxter is a force for good in this story, though not the only one, I should add. He kind of comes in towards the latter half of the book. And in an earlier part of the book, it's actually a lawyer for one of the mesh manufacturers that has an interest in untangling this web that is sort of artificially boosting the amount that any mesh manufacturer would have to pay to any settlement. So she tries to figure it out first. She doesn't get very far, but then JR enters the picture. He's a young lawyer. He's just out of law school, and he takes on Jerry's case. And he essentially fights like hell for her, trying to figure out who these people are, what they did, what the statute of limitations is on what they did, that kind of thing.
And so these women, to recap, they get this procedure. They're under pressure to get this procedure. And then how do they get their money?
Yeah, so whether they get their money is definitely an open question. But the way the money moves is, yeah, they are under pressure. They take out a loan.
A loan?
Like
a loan
said,
on the settlement.
Yeah, loan against the settlement, right?
Oh, like, my.
That's in the DocuSign thing I was telling you about, right? So they're taking a loan out to pay for the surgery, to pay for the trip to Florida. The loan pays for the doctors in Florida who perform this intricate surgery, sometimes within a fraction of the time that a surgeon should take to take care of the surgery. The doctor pays a kickback for the referrals, which is illegal in some places. The not really a law firm that fielded all those calls from the call center, they get about 45% of the ultimate settlement, according to the agreement that was signed in haste. and the rest pays off the loans. And hopefully it'll cover it all. The victims ultimately will get little, if anything.
So the victims get little. I want to see, like, perp walk here.
Do
we have any convictions by the end of this book?
I don't want to say, because it's definitely a spoiler, but I will say that's what kept me reading, because I wanted to see these guys go down. I mean, I did not expect to get so invested in a good versus evil kind of story that was laid on top of what is basically a story about how torts work, the injury law. But you can see a lot about human nature in this book, ultimately about how much harm they could cause. I mean, the guys at the center of this story, there's no way they didn't know how much harm they were causing. And yet, throughout all of it, their bottom line mattered more, how much money they were making. And they were making a lot. And I imagine that in the course of writing The Pain Brokers, Elizabeth Chamblee Birch had to grapple with that and think about, man, look how awful human beings can be to one another. And so I did ask her whether or not this book sort of opened her eyes further to the depths of human depravity.
The prologue of the book actually starts at a conference in Las Vegas, ironically called Mass Torts Made Perfect. And it's a whole bunch of lawyers who are talking about these cases. And I was there talking about the concerns that I have about mass torts. For some reason, I was never invited back. Unbeknownst to me at the time, all of these guys were there at the same time. They were throwing a huge party. They were celebrating having sold all of these thousands of women's claims to another law firm for $40 million. They went on to buy these outrageous things like platinum toe rings and ox blood red alligator boots and, you know,
boats,
right? $450,000 boats. I mean, you know, you can't make up the outrageousness of this stuff. And all of that is going on. It's the seedy underbelly that I think lawyers know exists, but that the surface world pretends doesn't exist, and yet it fuels this whole industry. You know, mass torts are tremendous. In fact, at one point in 2023, one out of every two cases filed in the civil justice system was part of a mass tort. So the vast majority of Americans who encounter our federal or state courts are likely to do so through this kind of a tort system.
So first of all, perfect that she starts the book in Las Vegas. I always think of when a story starts in Las Vegas, Stephen King's giant novel, The Stand, you know, where all the evil people are congregating in Las Vegas. So literally well done there. She wanted to stress, though, in making that latter point that, you know, torts serve a purpose. They have a function in our society. They're not all evil. But the problem is that, especially in this case, the women just turned into numbers, and it was very hard for them to get the human part of their story told, because in this kind of case, they're no longer visible, no longer able to speak truth to power.
Well, I'm sure in this book, you've got good doctors, good lawyers, good and bad on both sides. And it's sort of...
There are way more bad doctors in this book, but doctors who do a better or worse job of covering their tracks, or when they are forced to speak about what they did, you know, say, well, I was whatever I was doing was in the best interest of the patient.
Well, there are so many questions that this raises, and unfortunately, it's a complicated topic, so I'll pick up the book. I just want to know, is it worth reading? I mean, does it have a sense of beginning, middle, end? Does it have emotional connection? Obviously, you've addressed some of these things already, but what gives this book the narrative edge?
I think it's just a very well-told story, and it's the origin story of this book is cool, because she's, generally speaking, an academic tort lawyer, but she went to get an MFA in narrative nonfiction so she could tell this story. She encountered details about this mesh stuff in her research and just got so infuriated, as we are, right, learning about this story and reading about it, that she wanted to write about it and make these women's stories more well-known. So to that end, she does a great job of setting up the outrage early, where you're seeing these grifters sort of get wealthy on other people's pain, taking advantage of people in their most desperate hour. And you just want to see them squirm. You know, you do want to see the perp walk that you were talking about, right? So you keep reading and hoping for that moment. And there are so many of them, you want to see them each get one.
Well, I like that it's a lawyer who became a writer.
Yeah, it's so cool, right? I mean, my personal belief is all journalists should be all journalists should be lawyers and all novelists should be philosophers. But perhaps for this case, you know, all journalists should be philosophers. All writers should be lawyers, too.
Well, philosopher Peter, thank you for bringing me this book.
Well, let me tell you a little more about it, because I did want to say that it was, you know, she does a nice job of humanizing these people as well. And I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, Jerry is just one of the three women who come together to make the story whole. And I also loved, last thing I'll tell you about it, because I love this part, is that she drew on live depositions as part of her research. Like, she researched out the wazoo for this thing, and credit to the hustle that she put into to make this book happen. But having, like, depositions turned into dialogue, I mean, you know that's what they said because she has it written down, but it's just so dramatic. She turns it into such a drama that I think it's just really well done. I wouldn't say this is a beach read because, you know, it's a sprawling story.
It's pelvic mesh.
It's pelvic mesh. I mean, you can make anything a beach read if you simplify it enough. And this story just could not be simplified to the level of a beach read. But that's fine. It doesn't have to be a beach read. You got to bring your brain to this so that you can hold on to the fishing line that she is untangling here, because the corruption at the heart of it is meant to be complicated, right? So it takes detailed, careful journalism to untangle the whole thing. And I think she does a really wonderful job of untangling it in the simplest way possible, and making the story human. And as she tried to do, you know, make these women's stories stand out as human beings going through something and not just a number in a mass tort somewhere.
And she's from Georgia.
And she is from Georgia, right? That's the Georgia connection. She teaches at UGA.
Gotta have it. Well, the book is called The Pain Brokers, How Con Men, Call Centers, and Rogue Doctors Fuel America's Lawsuit Factory. Thanks for sharing it with me.
Happy to.
Support for GPB comes from our generous listeners and the Fox Center for Humanistic Inquiry at Emory University, presenting the Elman Lectures in Modern Literature with pachinko author Min Jin Lee, March 1st through 3rd. Complimentary tickets at elman.emory.edu.